What if sports history were completely different? That's the premise of a new podcast from former SportsCenter anchors Kevin Frazier and Trey Wingo. Later in the show, we speak with Frazier and Wingo to hear how they came to embrace the multiverse and what the fragmentation of sports media looks like now that ESPN isn't the only game in town. And there have been whispers that the WTA and ATP may merge into one entity. Those whispers grew louder recently when Saudi Arabia's public investment fund presented a $2 billion proposal to join up the two tours. We spoke with women's world number five player Jessica Pegula on what she thinks should happen now. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Eric Fisher in for Owen Poindexter, and this is Front Office Sports Today. The world's best men's and women's tennis players may one day be joined under a single organizing body. My fellow FOS newsletter writer David Rumsey recently spoke with tennis star Jessica Pegula about that idea, and he joins me now to discuss what he learned. Hello, David.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me.
So you had a chance to get face-to-face with her. This is always sort of an interesting thing that, she's a rising star in the sport. And I reading your interview with her, I got the sense that she really kind of wants to kind of do her thing and compete and be one of the world's best. But you got all these existential questions about the future of the sport kind of crashing down on her. What was that sense that you picked up as you were talking with her?
Yeah, absolutely. Jessica Pegula is, like you said, a really great tennis player and a really savvy mind. Obviously, people will know her last name from her parents who own the Buffalo Bills and Sabres. And she clearly has a lot of savvy when it comes to the business side of sports. And I remember last summer she had made some comments about the PIF potentially investing in tennis. And I wanted to kind of follow up on that now a year later with so many reports of a merger and the Saudis potentially funding that merger. And Jessica was very open with me about what she thinks about a merger, and she thinks that it would probably benefit the game for the men and the women all to be together and just fans in general. And she said it does matter where the funding comes from, but she's not opposed to that funding being from the PIF if they're going to inject enough money and it's going to change the sport for the better.
And that seems to be the real kind of debate or the crux of this issue, that in and of itself, there appears to be very little debate that this thing could be a good thing competitively. The current schedule is such a grind, and having a more streamlined, more lucrative set of tournaments for these top players to play, that seems to be pretty universal consensus that could be a good thing. It's just a matter of where this money comes from and how it gets there. And again, the sense I was getting reading your interview is that that's the trade-off that she's got to make. And it sounds like she's landing on, if this is good for the sport, it's good for the sport.
Yeah, I think so. And you mentioned the grind of the tennis calendar. You know, the men's and women's best players were down in Miami just last weekend. And now it's kind of a off period for some of the top men. But a lot of the top women, including Pegula and Emma Navarro and Madison Keys, to name a couple Americans, are in Charleston at the WTA event, trying to make some money this week. And then we'll gear up here as clay season is going on. And before we know it, the French Open will be here eventually. And it is tough. And there is equal prize money at those big tournaments. But there's still a long way to go. And just that allure of more money, whether it's coming from the PIF or whether it's coming from other institutional investors. Obviously, last year, CVC Capital Partners injected $150 million into the WTA for a minority stake in the league. And Pegula says that she's already seen some benefits from that as well. So there's clearly a strategy here that it seems to be working, and there's probably going to be more on the way.
What was the sense that you got from her in terms of lessons learned, in terms of what the PIF has done in and around LIV so far?
Yeah, unprompted, just brought up LIV Golf and what the PIF did with LIV and how that kind of fractured the sport of professional golf. And she doesn't want that to be the case in tennis. And I don't think that we've gotten any sense that there would be offshoots of men and women's players going and playing in some sort of Saudi funded league like a LIV Golf. And then the current ATP and WTA tours and Grand Slams would remain completely separate from that, like we kind of have in golf, where it's so muddled and confusing now. So I get where she was coming from. But yeah, I think she's hoping that there's not that kind of disruption, not that kind of confusion, and that if there is Saudi funding coming into tennis, which there is some already with investing in the men's ATP rankings, that naming rights deal that I think could be up to $100 million, according to some reports. And she mentioned, signage was down in Miami, on the backs of the courts. You can see it there in some of the pictures and videos. So it's a really interesting time, and it's kind of undeniable whether it's a merger or more funding. Everybody you speak to around tennis is like, okay, this is going to happen. It's just a matter of figuring out what it's going to look like when it happens.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that you bring up about the fractionalization here, because the debate, or at least the progress in terms of what's happening in tennis, seems to be sort of all or nothing. Either it's going to happen in full, or it's not going to happen at all. And that all already seems to be one of those lessons learned in terms of if this is going to happen, it's got to be all in one shot that you truly do unify the top ranks of the pros in this sport, or it just doesn't happen as to avoid that golf situation.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously the PGA Tour and LIV Golf and those governing bodies are still trying to figure out how that sport is going to come back together. I love golf, and it's been a mess to watch and try to figure out. So yeah, of course, I don't think tennis wants that, and tennis is confusing in its own right with how things are operated between the tours and in the Grand Slam. So I don't think they need even more disruption, and I don't think that they're going to get that. Like you said, it's kind of going to be all or nothing, and it's kind of trending towards all at this point.
Well, Dave, you've been all over. You've been sort of our resident expert on all things PIF, so I'm sure you're going to be staying on it. But for now, thanks for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
Even though Owen is out this week, you can still send him screenshots of your reviews for this show on Apple Podcasts at owen@frontofficesports.com for a chance to win a free Front Office Sports hat. In the meantime, I'll be filling in this week along with my colleague David Rumsey, and we'll also feature conversations Owen recently had with folks across the business of sports. Up next, former SportsCenter anchors Trey Wingo and Kevin Frazier have just launched a new show that rewrites sports history. A kind of leap into the multiverse, their podcast Alternate Routes is the latest example of talent leaping from legacy media brands into the great unknown of the always-on streaming future. Owen Poindexter spoke with Wingo and Frazier, and they tell us why now was the right time to make this move. That conversation is next.
All right, very excited to be joined now by Trey Wingo and Kevin Frazier. Welcome, Trey. Welcome, Kevin.
What's going
That's
on?
Us. How are we?
Yeah. All right. Great to have you on. So you're the co-hosts of Alternate Routes on Wondery, the show you look at big crossroad moments in sports history and imagine what would happen if things went the other way. What was the genesis of the show?
Well, it wasn't Canadian.
Yeah,
it's not Canadian. So it's alternate. We go in routes.
Yeah, we call it routes.
But it's okay.
Is roots Canadian?
That was a question. Like, right. Literally, we were deciding you could call it roots or routes. And unless Roots decides to sponsor the show, which is a Canadian company, I think we're going alternate routes.
Okay, got it. Alternate routes. Okay, not things under the ground. All right. So I guess that was one route you chose. How did the show come about?
I think every sports fan does this, right? Like
everybody does it.
You take one thing and you're like, God, if my team had just done this, or if they had just signed this player, or if this play hadn't happened, how differently would it have been? And, Kevin and I, this is stuff when we work together at ESPN, we talk about this stuff all the time.
All the time.
And it just seemed very natural to sort of take this concept and take one moment, one defining play, one decision, and just run with it. If it had gone the other way, how different things would be.
Who's your sports team? Who's the team that you're most passionate about?
The Mets at this point.
Okay, so there are so many. There are so many things. What if Bill Buckner doesn't miss that ball?
Correct.
What
game six, right?
What happens?
What are the ingredients of a good what if, one that can sustain a whole show?
Wow. Well, we have several. Each time we go down and we have different alternate routes and routes.
Routes. See,
see what
he
happens?
Did it too. It's going to happen a lot.
We have different alternate routes, and some of them are simple,
Yeah,
like
yeah.
if the Mets had traded, you know, hadn't traded Nolan Ryan, he would have been a great pitcher. They would have won more games.
Correct.
But then you can go down the list and it can go deep.
Yeah.
Because if he stays, it's different. And is he end up with, you know, does he go to Studio 54 and hang with certain people?
Correct.
And there are a lot of routes you can take.
Like, for example, we have one where, you know, the Lakers and the Bulls in 1979 had a coin flip to decide who would get the first overall pick in the draft, and it would be Magic Johnson. Lakers won the coin flip, they get Magic Johnson. Well, what if the Bulls won the coin flip? Like, what happens there? They probably never draft Michael Jordan.
Right, they don't have the number three pick there.
Yeah. So where does Michael Jordan go, and where does that affect the rest of that draft? In fact, we have a scenario in that one, which I don't want to give too much away.
I mean,
but when an NBA player becomes the first African-American president of the United States instead of Barack Obama.
To take this in a slightly different direction, or a very different direction, wondering if you've thought about, like, the what-if moments in your own lives, like sort of the branching paths for your media careers, where you might have gone.
What's funny? We were actually having this conversation earlier today. Well, ESPN first approached me to join ESPN in 1992. I didn't go to ESPN until 1997 because I was under contract at my station in St. Louis and they wouldn't let me go. But one of the big things at ESPN when you get there is they have a seniority list on who can take vacations first, you know? So when I got there, I was low man on the totem pole and all the good weeks were gone, you know? And the first thing I did when I got there, I looked at where would I be on the vacation list if I had come in 1992 instead of 1997? I would have been like top three or four in terms of seniority, and I would have gotten much better vacation days. So that's one of the first things.
I mean, my ultimate thought would automatically be, what if I had stayed at ESPN and not gone to Entertainment Tonight? Because I went from one day walking through an airport and men would walk up to me and they talk sports. So the next day, men thinking I died and their wives being like, no, actually, you can tell me about, you know, my favorite actor. What about that dress J-Lo wore?
Yeah.
What about the shoes that so-and-so had on? What about that moment with, you know, with Meghan Markle's wedding?
Yeah.
That became my life instead of first downs and triple doubles and home runs.
Yeah, and Kevin, as someone who's had, you know, a foot in the sports world, a foot in the entertainment world, you've done a lot. Is it all entertainment to you, or does sports occupy a different headspace?
I thought it was all entertainment to me. There are two differences. Sports is heavy numbers, right?
Yeah.
But you do have to know, like, your dressmakers.
Correct.
You have to know your directors. You have to know important things about movies. But also, a thing I learned very quickly because it caused a little friction was that after a basketball game, if Shaquille O'Neal misses two free throws, I walk in and I say, yo, you missed two free throws. What do you have to say? When Brad Pitt comes down the line, you don't say, that last movie you did was trash. How are you making up for this one? Yeah. That doesn't happen. You know, that's a difference. But it's all entertainment.
It really is. I mean, you look at what sports has become. And, you know, like old school story here, late 70s, early 80s, when ESPN first decided to cover the NFL draft, they went to the NFL and said, we want to televise the draft. The NFL's first response was, why? Why would you want to do this? It's just a bunch of old men rolling up names of players that nobody knows. Well, now it's a three-day extravaganza in prime time, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday we finish everything up. Everything the NFL does, the combine used to be just for scouts where you would go and they would run around, you'd get all these drills. Now we're doing that in prime time so people can see who runs the fastest 40, who has the strongest arm. The NFL is really good about capitalizing our attention and making money. And that's the entertainment factor that has come into sports these days because that's what drives the business.
100%. I got to do so many entertainment things that were sports focused, like the All-Star Game, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We both go to the Super Bowl. We've been at every Super Bowl doing very different things.
Yeah.
I'm chasing the halftime performer. He's handing the MVP trophy.
Right.
But we're both at the Super Bowl.
But, you know, the Super Bowl, think about it. The Super Bowl used to be, you know, it used to be played in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And now it's literally the most watched event every year. It's the most watched event on, like, television, over-the-air television does not exist without football. I think last year the top 75 watch shows on network television 100%. Were all NFL games.
Yeah, and if you add in college football, it's, you know, something you get up to like 93 of the top 100.
It's
something like that.
It's
yeah.
Sports rules the world.
And Trey, is someone who, I mean, you spent you know, so much time at the sports media epicenter at ESPN. But now we're in this more fragmented media world where, you know, you guys are doing your show. We have, you know, outlets like Front Office Sports. I'm just wondering kind of how you see the ESPN right now, its place in the sports media ecosystem, going from like the one big thing to now there's a lot of things.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Technology and COVID changed almost everything, right? Like the big example I can give you is 47 days before the 2020 draft, we had this whole stage set up in Las Vegas and we were all going to be there. And it was this massive live extravaganza and everything shut down. And thankfully, right around 2020 was when Zoom calls and everything else, sort of Riverside or whatever, so the technology was available to us. And we changed, you know, I went from the idea of being in Las Vegas with hundreds of thousands of people and all this kind of stuff to being in a studio by myself. And Mel was on another screen, Booger was on another screen, Daniel Jeremiah and Michael and Kurt Warner from the NFL Network and Mel were on all these different screens. And it changed the way you do business. You didn't have to be there in person anymore. You know, ESPN used to fly everybody from all across the country into Bristol, Connecticut, put them up in these hotels that existed only because
you're calling them a hotel. You're calling it a hotel. No,
literally there were hotels all the way. I mean, it was awful. And that plane fare, they're not doing that anymore. Like they'll do it maybe 10% of the time. And the industry is changing so quickly. You know, technology is moving and evolving so quickly that brick and mortar big time studio stuff is really having a hard time keeping up. And that's why ESPN is investing so much in ESPN Plus and Disney Plus. And that's why you see Fox and ESPN and TNT pooling their resources on these streaming sources, because they know Roger Goodell said it best at the Super Bowl this year. Someone asked, well, why are you streaming games? And he goes, well, we have to fish where the fish are. And audiences, and younger audiences specifically, younger demographics, are on streaming services. That's why that game was on Peacock. That's why they just announced that a wildcard game will be on Amazon exclusively this year. So that ESPN went from a place you had to be, like it was a destination place. And I want to be clear, ESPN is still a Goliath. It's still fantastic. It's a dynasty. It's the New York Yankees of sports entities.
But
you don't have to be there anymore.
And you know what, Trey? And it's funny that he says that, because when you think about being in person, there was a thing that went with being there. There was a thing that went with being in the building and seeing everybody each and every day. It raised the level of competition. It raised the way you interacted with each other.
Yeah.
So now people are just in boxes. And I think you lose this skill that was brought to the table. And so we had to expand and we had to go crazy and hear every man's take and everybody sitting in their house doing their thing. And I think you have to get back to where it is, that moment in person where you feel, where people are actually playing off of each other. It's a very different animal. Sitting on that sports desk with each other is different than anything.
There's nothing
else
like it. There's nothing like it. You know, I talk to a lot of people that are still there and they're like, we're still doing the shows, but it's a very different vibe here now. It's a very different thing. And, you know, it's hard to catch up. And you know, they've invested so much money in the studios out here and in the studios in not only Bristol, but Seaport in New York. Those are not inexpensive places to build studios. And that's why you see the fluctuations with what ESPN wants to do and, quite frankly, what the NFL Network is trying to do.
And for me, those changes kind of dovetail with how it seems to be more and more personality-driven, where back in the day, it was like SportsCenter, you know, there was personality to it, there was a feel to it, but it also felt like a news show. It's like, here's what happened today. And now it's more like, what kind of attitude, what sort of, like, you know, fun wackiness are you bringing to sports? And, like, we're still going to watch the highlights, but I'm also, like, as much I'm there for like your voice and your attitude.
Well, what's interesting about that is also that you had to know what you were talking about. And when you said something, it carried weight. I'll never forget talking about North Carolina beat Duke. But before the game, Matt Doherty was the coach and Raymond Felton had left town. He had left the program and they had to chase him on the highway, catch him and bring him back to campus. It was chronicled in the local paper. I talked about it in my lead in on SportsCenter that night. And midway through the show, I hear in my ear, Matt Doherty wants to talk to you after the show.
Oh, yeah.
And it was that kind of weight that it carried because yeah. we were reporting things. And I get it now. You see people and you can sit at home and you can yell and scream and say these things about players, but there's a responsibility that came with being on SportsCenter, and there yeah. was a responsibility of what you said, and you checked it, you vetted it, and you talked to people. Like yeah. Trey talked. I've heard some stories doing this podcast yeah. that Trey has said yeah. that I've been like, what?
Yeah. Well, what? To that point, what he's talking about, we did NFL Live once, and people forget this. Nick Saban's fantastic career as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. He famously said after a game, I don't care whether we win or lose. We got to do it right. And I was like, okay, you're not in college anymore. Okay, winning is the only thing that matters. Right. And it created such a – we talked about it on the show on NFL Live – created such a stir, to your point about New Year. Harvey Green, the head of PR for the Miami Dolphins, called and said, Nick Saban wants to talk to you mm-hmm. about what – I said, Nick, I get what you were trying to say, but yeah. you can't tell a professional football audience that winning doesn't matter. It's the only thing that matters. Like, you're not building a program to get these kids – no, you are paid to win games. That is the only thing that mattered. And I got what he was saying, but you cannot tell a fan base of a professional football team, I do not care whether we win or lose. Like, that's the only thing you should care about.
And that's what you miss right now
yeah.
is not the – our personalities were in that we had relationships and we were delivering yeah. facts and – that's what's important now. So that when the guy is on TV yelling and saying outrageous stuff, you could be like, hey, my man, yeah. that's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's not true. That's not true.
It's just saying stuff to saying stuff.
You're just saying stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so many media figures right now are sort of like playing the opposite side of it, of like being the like intentionally irresponsible figure to like provide the counterweight.
What you just said is a really good word, okay? Because that bothers me. When I know people are saying things just, and their response is, well, I'm just asking the question. You're never just asking the question.
Ever.
You're never just, there's an intent behind why you say that. And what is your intent? And some people, to their credit, and they are very well off and profitable and successful because of it, being in the business of being wrong in this current media landscape is very profitable. Kevin and I were never, I don't want to just spew things to be wrong. Mm-hmm. This is what I believe, and these are the facts that I have to back up why I'm saying this.
How many years did you do NFL Live? 14?
15 years.
15 so for years. 15 years, you imagine that after somebody does something for 15 years, they might talk to some people. They mm-hmm. might make some calls. They might be integrated into the system. And so when you talk and listen to people, choose people who actually know,
yeah.
have actually been a part of the system and know. Not the guy in his basement, not the new kid coming up, but who are the people who really know? And that's all I think about.
That matters to us
a lot.
All right. Kevin Frazier, Trey Wingo, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having us.
You got it. Thanks.
That's it for today. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.